This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Scott Pettigrew? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Scott Edmund Pettigrew was born in June 1966 and lived in California. For several years, he was in a romantic relationship with a man in Los Angeles. At some point, Scott had difficulty regulating his intake of alcohol and attended law school. Eventually, Scott ended up in Cathedral City, California, about 2 hours east of Los Angeles. On February 8, 2016, he was evicted from his home and asked a coworker he had known for less than a year if he could move into her residence. Her name was Mimi Anita Cohen. She went by the name Anita. She owned a 1,404-square-foot, three-bedroom, two-bath, single-story house on Heritage Court. She purchased it in 2002 for $172,000. For a few years, Anita had run her own business, but ended up working part-time at a Walgreens. With her financial situation becoming desperate, Anita decided to rent the two rooms in her house that she did not occupy. She put an ad on Craigslist asking for $750 a month per bedroom, plus half the utilities. Anita was able to find a few different roommates. One long-term tenant was named Daryl. When Scott moved into Anita's house in February 2016, there was trouble right away. Anita's tenant, Daryl, would later say that Scott engaged in behavior that was irritating. For example, Scott allegedly stole various items in the house, like a light bulb, a toilet bowl cleaning product, and a shower head. Instead of taking responsibility, he blamed Daryl for the missing items. Furthermore, Scott allegedly terrorized Daryl's cats and knocked objects off Daryl's dresser. Scott went to Anita and claimed that Daryl was secretly recording him in the bathroom with a camera disguised as a flashlight. Daryl denied these accusations, but Anita believed everything Scott was saying. The dynamic in the house had become extremely tense. It felt as though Scott and Anita were against Daryl. They tried to intimidate Daryl by suggesting they would make false allegations to the police about him. On one occasion, Daryl used his cell phone to record Scott and Anita conspiring to lie to the authorities. Daryl had to call the police a few times because Anita and/or Scott locked him out of the house. On March 7, 2016, Daryl made one of these calls to the police. But when they arrived, they arrested him because Scott and Anita had made false statements. Daryl was charged with a few offenses, including burglary. Unable to make the $150,000 bond, Daryl remained in jail. Anita may have thought that falsely accusing Daryl was humorous, expedient, or advantageous, but she soon found out that conspiring with Scott was a bad idea. He lost his job and stopped paying rent. Scott allegedly started stealing various items from Anita. Desperate not to lose any more, she locked everything that she could in her bedroom with her. On May 31, 2016, one of Anita's neighbors was in his backyard when he heard a commotion coming from her house. A man using an angry voice was heard shouting the words, quote, "You will rue the day that you were born if anything happens to those dogs. Senile old blank," unquote. The blank is a word that rhymes with stitch. This shouting continued for about 10 minutes. Later that day, a woman who lived on the street behind Anita's house found a dog wandering around. She asked her next-door neighbor for help locating the owner of the dog. Later that afternoon, this neighbor saw Scott screaming the words, quote, "Mona, Mona, where are you? Blanking blank. Where are you? I can't believe she did that. Where are you, Mona? Where are you, baby?" Unquote. The neighbor waved to Scott and indicated that she had the dog he was looking for and expressed her concern that Scott was mad and might bring harm to the dog. Scott replied, quote, "Oh no, I would never do that to my baby. I can't believe that blank let her out," unquote. Presumably, he believed or wanted others to believe that Anita had let his dog out of her house. Later, Anita would deny this allegation. In early June 2016, Anita went to the authorities and admitted that she falsely accused Darryl of committing crimes. She acknowledged that he was in jail for something he didn't do. Darryl was innocent the entire time. After this startling revelation, the authorities released Darryl, but for some reason, they did not charge Anita with a crime. Here they had a person in front of them who admitted to committing a serious offense, yet she was allowed to walk free. As it turns out, this would be a disastrous blunder. Upon Darryl's release, he found out that Anita and/or Scott had euthanized his cats. So not only had they falsely accused him, his cats were dead. On June 9, 2016, Anita Cohen filed for a restraining order against Scott and to evict him from her house. She made several claims, including Scott had refused to pay rent, cut the batteries out of her phones, poured water on her computer, stole her food and all her silverware, allowed his two dogs to defecate and urinate in her house, and would occasionally go on a tirade, which involved screaming. Anita wrote, quote, "I am being terrorized daily in my own home, escalating each day. I need help. I need a restraining order," unquote. Nowhere in Anita's statement did she indicate that Scott had been physically violent. On June 10, a temporary restraining order was issued against Scott. The judge ruled that he needed to stay 15 feet away from Anita, and his dogs would have to leave the house. So the dogs were evicted, but Scott could stay. The restraining order became active at midnight on June 15, 2016. The case was to be revisited at a hearing in 2 weeks. As it turns out, the hearing would not be necessary. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On June 14, 2016, sometime after 1 p.m., a police officer arrived at Anita's home to serve Scott with the temporary restraining order. The officer handed Scott the restraining order and explained that he had until the end of the day to remove his dogs from the house. Scott said, okay, turned around, and walked away. The officer never mentioned the additional restraining order requirement of staying 15 feet away from Anita. That evening, Anita called the police requesting assistance. She indicated that she could not get into her house. An officer arrived at 7:35 p.m. Anita told him that her front door would not open, and the garage door was not working either. After Anita supplied him with a key to the padlock on the side gate, the officer entered the garage through a side door. In the garage, he noticed that the garage door opener had been unplugged. The door functioned normally after the officer plugged it back in. Anita told the officer that another officer had served the restraining order to Scott earlier that day. She wanted the officer to speak with Scott. The officer knocked on Scott's bedroom door, but gave up after there was no answer. As he was leaving, the officer advised Anita to hire a management company or find some other way to handle her tenant problems. A few hours later, Anita spoke to her son by telephone. Her son could hear Scott yelling and ranting in the background. Concerned about Anita's safety, her son told her to activate a digital audio recorder, which Anita had purchased to document Scott's bad behavior. During the last 30 seconds of the phone conversation, Anita's son could hear glass being broken and objects being smashed. At 11:39 p.m., Anita's daughter-in-law contacted the police and told them about the argument. She asked the police to check on Anita. At 11:42 p.m., a police officer arrived at Anita's house. He rang the doorbell and knocked on the front door, but did not get a response. When he looked through a window, he could see dogs running around inside the house. Also, a vase and a flower pot were shattered on the floor. After backup arrived, officers jumped over a block wall into the backyard. There they found 66-year-old Anita Cohen floating face down in the swimming pool. She was unresponsive, covered in bruises, and had cuts on her forehead, lip, and ear. Handfuls of her hair had been ripped out of her head. Anita was pronounced dead at 12:17 a.m., now on June 15. The temporary restraining order did not achieve the desired result. Inside the house, the police found Scott Pettigrew in his room. He was not wearing any clothing, and there were scratches on his fingers and his back. When questioned by the police, Scott tried to make it seem as though Darryl may have done something to Anita. The police learned that Darryl was in the hospital during the time Anita was attacked and could not have been involved. Scott Pettigrew was immediately arrested. mostly because of the murder part. Here's what the police found during the course of their investigation. Anita's house was covered in dog feces and dog urine. There was evidence of a struggle, including several broken items. A statue of a cat had been broken, and a paw was found lodged in one of the kitchen cabinet doors. Scott's bedroom was filled with trash, dirt, and wet clothing. His bed did not have any linen on it. There was an open bottle of vodka and several open food containers. Anita's digital audio recorder was discovered under the kitchen table. Here is what was on the recorder. Anita said, "Stay away from me. Stay the blank away from me. You blank, you blank. Now you're going to start beating up an old lady, huh?" Scott responded, "You're an old blank, aren't you? Are you recording me? You don't know, huh? Blank." Anita said, "Get the blank out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here. Get off me. Go." At this point, the recording terminated. At about 9:30 p.m., three neighbors heard a male making groaning or grunting noises. One of the neighbors heard a splashing sound coming from Anita's pool that lasted no more than 30 seconds. An autopsy revealed that Anita died from blunt force trauma with submersion in water and cardiovascular disease as possible contributing factors. Anita's DNA was found under Scott's fingernails. On August 29, 2019, Scott was convicted of first-degree murder, elder abuse with force likely to cause great bodily harm or death, and misdemeanor violation of a protective order. In November of that year, he received a prison term of 25 years to life, with credit for over 3 years he already served in jail, awaiting trial. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. Scott had a history of being a poor tenant. A woman who lived in an apartment with Scott in West New York, New Jersey, had several complaints about him. She indicated that his dogs had a lot of accidents in the apartment. Scott engaged in threatening behavior after another roommate allegedly left the door unlocked. He was worried that his dogs would escape through this door and be killed by a vehicle in the street. Scott stopped paying rent and threatened to sue the roommates. The concerns about canine escapes and the failure to pay rent are similar to behavior that Scott would later exhibit with Anita. As a side note, I've always found the city name West New York, New Jersey to be curious. This area is just north of the Lincoln Tunnel on the New Jersey side of the Hudson River. I think the unusual name is a way for the residents to avoid being reminded that they live in New Jersey. They're like, "I don't live in New Jersey. I live in West New York." This is kind of like calling Compton, California, East Malibu. Item number two, there is no question that Scott was guilty of first-degree murder. His only defense was to argue for second-degree murder by indicating that he was intoxicated and therefore immensely impaired. This, of course, is not a valid defense. I don't think that Scott planned the murder far in advance, but it was premeditated. Furthermore, Scott had a history of using alcohol. He should have known the risks. A former lover said that Scott chased him down the street with a knife after becoming intoxicated. I think Scott's motive for murdering Anita was straightforward. He was angry at her about the restraining order and had little impulse control. Item number three. At the time of her death, Anita was in extremely poor physical condition. For example, she had a 90% blockage in her right coronary artery. She was in no condition for a physical struggle. Apparently, Anita believed that Scott was willing to steal, threaten, intimidate, terrorize, and harass her, but would not be physically violent. She took a real gamble being alone with him and lost. Furthermore, Anita never ran a background check for anyone she allowed to live in her house. Now moving to my last item, number four. Anita Cohen was a murder victim, but she was also someone who committed a serious crime. This has made it difficult for some people to have compassion for her. Anita conspired with Scott to frame Daryl, who was an innocent man. Daryl spent a few months in jail when he did nothing wrong. After engaging in this criminal conspiracy, Anita found herself the target of Scott's deviousness. When she went to court and accused Scott of a crime, the judge did not appear to be convinced. Anita had been down this road before, accusing men who were living in her house. First, Daryl was supposedly the problem. Now Scott was the problem. This made it seem like Anita was simply falsely accusing her tenants in order to get them evicted. She was like the proverbial boy who cried wolf. If Anita had embraced honesty, she would have had a better chance of getting the restraining order. There is no question that Anita engaged in horrendous behavior, but it's worth considering how she may have been a victim of Scott's manipulation. After all, Anita did go to the authorities and confess her crime. This led to Daryl being released. Never having falsely accused him in the first place would have been a better move, but at least Anita tried to make amends. Even so, I think Anita's legacy is one of a criminal who was murdered by her conspirator. She needed to face justice for her crime against Daryl. Falsely accusing someone of felonies is not behavior that can ever be taken lightly. Furthermore, she may have played a part in killing Daryl's cats. The authorities thought they were doing Anita a favor by not charging her, but if they had charged her, she may still be alive. Holding Anita accountable would have been good for everyone.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.